You're listening to Christian Fourier's 25-Hour Crusade for a Cure, brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, by the Walmart Foundation, by Vertex Pharmaceuticals, by McFarlane Energy, and by Northeast Electrical.
All right, welcome back to our Crusade for a Cure. And I am so happy, so excited to talk to our next guest. Her name is Felicia Pagliuca. First question, Felicia, is are you at all remotely connected to the Celtics? That's what all of our listeners are going to want to know. Pagliuca means Celtics to my listeners. What is there a connection to the ownership of the Celtics? You got to tell me the truth on this one.
We love the Celtics. And yes, my wonderful father-in-law, Steve Pagliuca, is part of the Celtics family. And we, our whole family, is so excited about the season ahead for the Celtics.
So your husband is his son?
Yes.
Holy cow. Now my head just exploded right there. I saw your name. I was like, wait, there's not a lot of Pagliucas in this world right now. So your title is Vice President and Disease Area Executive of Type 1 Diabetes.
Absolutely.
Okay. So when a lot of people listen to this, they will see Vertex and they will want to know what Vertex is.
Vertex Pharmaceuticals is a global biotechnology company headquartered right here in Boston, Massachusetts, that's focused on investing in scientific innovation to develop transformative medicines for serious diseases. And of course, that's been their mission for many, many years in cystic fibrosis and sickle cell disease and other diseases. And what's been really exciting for me is that as of a couple of years ago, they have turned their attention to type 1 diabetes.
When I do this every year, we get more and more information about breakthroughs and advances in cures and, you know, for diabetes. What is on the horizon? Is there anything that you can tell me that you're working on right now that a lot of people would be excited about?
Well, I'm a scientist, and I'm incredibly excited to be seeing the kind of scientific advances happening these days when it comes to understanding the root cause of diseases like type 1 diabetes, as well as developing the kind of technological advancements that can directly address that root cause. So, of course, in type 1 diabetes, it's a disease where the immune system attacks the insulin-producing cells that normally live in the pancreas. And as a result, people with type 1 diabetes rely on administering themselves replacement insulin every day their entire lives. And you know what a relentless burden that is on people and their families living with this disease. What's really exciting over just the last couple of years is there has been tremendous research on figuring out how to make those insulin-producing cells. And the idea is if we can make and replace those insulin-producing cells in people living with type 1 diabetes, we could transform that disease.
So all that research is going on in this building that we are actually in right now, because we are actually recording this in the Vertex building. And I took a little tour and saw some of the labs. And you're talking about those cells. Like, you were actually creating those cells to see if they were actually what? Create new cells that could be somehow implanted into a pancreas to recreate it and make it basically turn back on again?
That's right. So we're working to figure out how to create a cell therapy that replaces those missing, those destroyed cells in type 1 diabetes. So make the cells, implant them back in the body as a way to essentially address that root cause, that underlying biology.
Do you guys think that you are close to finding a cure for diabetes?
Well, I can tell you we are relentlessly committed to finding transformative therapies for type 1 diabetes. And what's been especially meaningful to us is that we now have our first cell therapy program in a clinical trial, in what's called a phase 1-2 clinical trial, investigating this kind of approach in patients who have type 1 diabetes and what's called severe hypoglycemia or problematic hypoglycemia, so very low blood sugar levels. And that study is actively enrolling here in the U.S. and in Canada. So we're really excited to see the emerging data from that clinical study.
So as a scientist and a Celtics fan, in your research, have you had an aha moment? Have you had a moment that just made you just so excited, or just like a light bulb went on and you saw like changes in the opportunity that was ahead of you for finding a cure? Do you have something like that?
Yeah, I think as scientists, I think those moments are are rare, but they do happen.
Have you had one?
Yes, absolutely. I think in our ability to actually recreate these insulin-producing cells, that was one of those moments that gave us a lot of hope that we could be on the right track scientifically to developing a whole new kind of therapy for type 1. Of course, it's early. We have lots more work to do. But that has given us, I think, the reason to push so hard.
Is this like your area of expertise? Is this what you went to school for? Is this, were you drawn to this aspect? Or how did that all start for you?
Yes, after my PhD studies, I met a person that your listeners may know named Doug Melton, who is a professor at the Harvard Stem Cell Institute, who's dedicated his entire career to type 1 diabetes research, and in particular to researching and developing cell therapies as potential cures. And I was captivated by his vision for what could be possible developing these kinds of living medicines. And so more than 10 years ago now, joined his research efforts at Harvard, and we started a small biotech company together called Semma Therapeutics a number of years ago, which was the company that Vertex acquired in 2019 that launched our Vertex Type 1 Diabetes program. The wonderful thing for me and for all of our teams here is that Dr. Melton decided to come join us here at Vertex a couple of months ago. So he's now a research scientist down the hall with his own laboratory here researching these therapies.
When you meet diabetics, is there any hope that you can give them that they can maybe have an easier life, like something to look forward to? Because I could tell you this with my son being, 21 years old now, he just complains and bitches and just hates it, right? The discipline that goes into making sure that he's regulated and everything that goes into it, right? It's a lot of work, especially for a young kid. And he keeps asking me about these developments. And when I mentioned Vertex, and how I have a connection to them and how I'm actually like, wow, I'm getting some really good information here. There is hope. He wants it now.
Oh, we all want it now.
He wants it now. So, I mean, I guess I know you can't tell us exactly because who knows when it will happen. But is there, hope in the next 10 years? I mean, is that too ambitious?
I feel incredibly hopeful. I think there's been many, many years of research ongoing in this space, but to be at the point now where we're moving from research in laboratories to clinical trials is a really important inflection point, I think, for our community. And we are incredibly grateful to those patients and their families who volunteer to participate in clinical trials, because that's really the bridge from research to developing new medicines that people may one day be able to benefit from.
So what challenges does Vertex see ahead, and how is it addressing those challenges?
Well, drug development is incredibly challenging overall. And we often like to say it's the ultimate team sport. Maybe there are other sports teams that would disagree. But for us, drug development is the ultimate team sport where we really have to work carefully and thoughtfully with all of our stakeholders, whether it's our researchers, our manufacturing team, regulators, the type 1 diabetes patient and advocacy community, and so many more to make sure we're on the right track to hopefully bring these transformative therapies to people.
What's a day like for you? You wake up in the morning and you say what?
Well, I wake up in the morning and I think I am so lucky to get to go and do this job where all we think about day in and day out is how do we figure out how to make people's lives better who are living with the burden of type 1 diabetes. And so every day is different, whether it's working with our scientific researchers, working with our manufacturing teams, working with our clinical and regulatory teams. All of us are banding together to try and put every puzzle piece in place to not only do the right kind of research, but bring it into clinical development and ultimately all the way through that innovation life cycle to get a new medicine approved and ultimately enable people to have access to innovation in type 1 diabetes.
How often do you get frustrated with the process?
It is a challenging process, but I think those of us who go into drug development know that from the outset. And so we know part of our job is really to just face those hard problems head on. If it was easy, it would have been cured already. And so our job is really to tackle the hardest challenges and to bring the best minds and the most dedicated people to the fight. It is such exciting work and such meaningful work that it is something that I think we all do as a mission and a passion.
Can you tell me about when insulin was discovered? Because before insulin, diabetes was a death sentence. You found out you had diabetes, you died. There was no cure. There's nothing that you could do for it. Insulin is discovered 100 years ago. Lives have been made easy. People are able to have families, go on with their life, like any other regular person. You wouldn't even know somebody had diabetes unless they told you.
It's actually a really interesting moment in time because we are almost exactly 100 years out from the discovery of insulin. And so it was really only in the 1920s that scientists first isolated insulin and administered it to a person with type 1 diabetes. And that became a life-saving medicine and perhaps one of the most important life-saving medicines of the 20th century. And what we've seen over that 100 years is advances in how we make insulin and advances in how we administer it to people living with disease, advances in how we monitor blood sugar levels through various kinds of technologies. Fundamentally, we are still treating type 1 diabetes by injecting people with insulin, which is what we first did in 1921. And so our goal is to change that paradigm, to make the 21st century a very different world for people living with type 1 diabetes than the century that came before.
And it was discovered in Canada, right?
It was discovered in Canada. And there's a really interesting story of a flame that was lit to represent this kind of breakthrough milestone of insulin. And it continues to burn to this day. And the hope is that one day, once there is a cure for type 1 diabetes and insulin is no longer required, that flame will be extinguished. And I'm sure all of us in the community will be cheering for that day.
But why is it important for people to go to the website and donate as much as they can?
We here at Vertex, we are new to type 1 diabetes, but we understand what a relentless burden this disease is for people living with it, for their families. And we are committed to working tirelessly on our end to help people living with type 1 diabetes and, just want to support this community in any way we can.
All right. That was Dr. Felicia Pagliuca. At Pagliuca. I don't know why everybody has a problem saying that name. She was from Vertex Pharmaceuticals. And if the name sounds familiar, it's because she is the daughter-in-law of Steve Pagliuca. So the good thing and the great thing about Vertex Pharmaceuticals, because with all their input, with all their great scientific innovation for people with serious diseases, especially people with type 1 diabetes, they have pledged a $25,000 sponsorship. That was pretty cool, and really thank them for that. So, all right. So, the sun's going to be coming up here at any point in time. Chad Finn from the Boston Globe will be joining me at 4 a.m. I'm sure he's in the car now, driving over here. Levin Reed from WBZ Morning Show. Okay, Levin's been a friend of mine forever. He's going to join us also. They're going to take us from 4 to 5, and then from 5 to 6, it's going to be Levin Reed, Dan Roach, and Steve Burton. Although, I don't think Steve Burton's actually going to show up. I got $100 that says Steve Burton sleeps through it or says, was it this morning? I have a feeling that's going to be the answer. But when we come back, more importantly, there's a big competition happening at Boston College, and it's the Wiggy versus Foyer catch-off. We are going to hear from these so-called experts about whose side they're actually on. You're going to hear from Bill Belichick. You're going to hear from Teddy Bruschi, Matt Hasselbeck. Maybe Ty Law, if I feel like it. And we'll see who actually is the leader in the clubhouse. That's it. We'll get that next.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Celtics won their eighth consecutive game last night as they defeated the Atlanta Hawks 126-101 without Malcolm Brogdon and Marcus Smart. The Celtics are now 7-2 against 500 teams this season. They now travel to New Orleans to take on the Pelicans this Friday at 8:30. The Patriots take on the New York Jets this Sunday with kickoff at 1 p.m. at Gillette. Seven Patriots players are on the injury report, including Christian Barmore and Kyle Duggar, who were limited participants in practice yesterday. The Bruins are on a four-game win streak of their own, and they take on the Flyers tonight at the TD Garden. And some Red Sox news. Bench coach Will Venable is leaving the organization to become the associate manager of the Texas Rangers. You're listening to Christian Fourier's 25-Hour Crusade for a Cure. To donate, go to WEEI.com/crusade or diabetes.org/WEEI. I'm Justin Turpin. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
The Crusade continues. Christian Fourier's 25-Hour Crusade for a Cure. 25 hours straight on the air to raise money for the American Diabetes Association. Now, we're back to WEEI.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed, it ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl and I wanna make her mine. And she's watching with those eyes.
Oh, yeah, man. All right, so, Turpin, I have no idea what hour we are on. I have no idea what hour we are on, but let me remind everybody why the hell I am still up right now at 3:26 a.m. in the morning. I am doing a crusade for a cure, and what that is a 25-hour, you know, radiothon to raise as much money as possible for the American Diabetes Association. So far, we are at 26% of our goal. And when people ask me, you know, why I'm doing this and, you know, what's in it and what's the big deal, I mentioned, you know, that the average price of insulin nearly tripled between 2002 and 2013. You know, I mentioned as many as 1 in 4 people who use insulin say they ration their insulin, skipping doses or taking less than they need. So the goal here today is, first of all, we're going to have as much fun as possible, right? Because we're basically halfway through the 25 hours. I don't even know if I'm right or not.
This is hour 13, so yes.
All right, there we go. Oh, wait a second. Don't tease whose sexy voice that is. So we're going to have a lot of fun. I feel like we're going to have a lot of fun the next, like, 2 hours because I have a lot of cool guests that I've been waiting to talk to for a long period of time, and we're having them all in the building at the same time. So, one, we're going to have a lot of fun while we educate and inspire participants about the ADA's work and our research and making progress towards a cure, because I truly believe that in the next 10 years, they will have a cure for diabetes. But joining me now is one of my better friends, like really one of my better friends in the business, and definitely one of the sexiest, not only sexiest men, but absolutely the sexiest voice. Don't be ashamed of your sexy voice.
Why do we start this? Is,
hold on, this is because I can't help it. You're so good looking. So this is Levin Reed. Levin Reed. Okay, so let me know if I got this right. Okay, so Levin Reed, I started working with you at WBZ with Patriots pre and post game show.
Sure.
You would I'd see you traveling. We'd do, you know, post game shows. At one point in time, remember we had that country fest?
Yeah.
And we were doing a post game show
during country
fest. Some stupid country fest.
And there was a lot of stuff that we I kept saying to you, I'm like, see that girl over there? She's gonna be my.
Oh
friend,
yeah,
eventually.
There was. I could find your type.
Like, I could find your type.
I was like, oh yeah, you make her feel safe. Like, she feel really comfortable in your arms. And we were sitting there doing that between takes.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. But then, I feel like, I don't know if you like. I wouldn't say you graduated because you obviously were very successful in your career, but you feel like you got some stability. Can I say that? Is that correct?
So we started, like, I was freelancing.
Yeah, you were freelancing.
I wouldn't say it was thin, because WBZ has always taken care of me.
Yeah, you were busy working.
Yeah, and I was busy working. But all of a sudden, what they did was, they were like, you know what, you're freelancing, but you still had another job. Maybe you don't do that other job, but we just have you freelance full time.
Yeah.
So I just freelance full time. And then this past February, they said, hey, would you want to do the morning show? And now you don't have to freelance anymore.
So the morning show, okay, it starts at 4 a.m.
It starts at 4:33.
Oh, it starts at 4:33.
I get there at 3 a.m. I get up at 1:30.
Okay, so it's, wow. See, I always thought about, like, okay, like, I'm a morning person, and I would
love. Are you that much of a morning
person? No. I feel like that's insane. People who do what you are doing now, and they do it for, like, 25, 30 years, I honestly feel like they're, you know, their reality is so much different than ours.
Listen, as I said, I don't have kids, but I live the life of an infant. You know, I'm up
very
early. I go to bed when the lights are on, or when, you know, you have to, or during the daylight all the time. You lay down. I mean, you're tired. You just get used to being tired all
the
time.
So when do you go to bed?
I still haven't mastered that. So I try and lay down. I try and lay down between 6:30 and 7. And then I'm saying sometimes I fall asleep between 8:30 and 9, or sometimes I fall asleep before then.
So you are actually – so this is a part of your job. Like, there's aspects of your job that I love,
mm-hmm.
and there's aspects of your job that I hate.
Which is?
Well, I hate the fact that you really have to force yourself to go to bed, the whole eye thing on. Like, and the winter is probably great. It's dark
anyways.
At 4:30, right? So you got to put – and you got to, like, close the blinds and just – force yourself to go to bed.
So there's no forcing yourself to go to bed. There was.
You tired?
Because you're so tired. You get up at 1:30. As long as you don't.
But
take
don't you
that
feel
nap.
Like you're missing out on life
a little bit? I did have a little bit of FMO.
Yeah, FMO. You're missing out on, like, everything that is fun in life.
And it's funny because, you know, when I first started, my friends would, you know, I'm driving to work at 1:30, quarter of two, and they're like calling me from the bar. They're like, "Hey, what's going on?" And I'm like, "They're leaving, and I'm going in." You get used to it.
I actually lived that life for a summer. I was talking to these other guys like, I don't know, 1 a.m. in the morning. I had a job in Long Beach working on the docks loading trucks. You know, like that was my job. So the job started at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I lived in the valley, which is literally like an hour and a half from Long Beach. But it didn't matter because it was like no traffic. So I was like, screw it. But I would have to. I was going to bed at like 7 o'clock.
Oof.
Because I had to wake up at 12 in order to get there, you know, by 1:30 so I could start loading these stupid trucks. Worst job I ever had in my life, Levin.
I
despised it more than life itself, these stupid trucks, and it just never stopped. Like, I would load a truck by hand, okay, no pallet, pusher, no, like, forklift, nothing. Some stupid jerk, and I hate them to this day. I don't know who they were. This is what they do. They would roll around. This is all the union guys, right?
Sure.
So the union guys would roll around the forklift, and they didn't care about me, right? So they would just dump a pallet, and they would just leave. As soon as I was done with that one, they would come back and dump another pallet, and just over and over and over. But I remember I had no life, and I was, what, 21?
Well, I
maybe?
Couldn't do it at 21. That's different. I'm a little bit older now.
I only did it for a summer, though, so I shouldn't act like summer. I was like – It wasn't like I did it for like, you know, 5 years.
Well, I'm still in the summer, so to speak about it. I started this job in March. So I started the new schedule. But I will say this. I'm not used to it, but I understand. I feel like it's like when your daughter's going to bring home a guy that maybe you don't like. You're like, okay, I'll just have to deal with that.
Tell me what you like about it then.
I will say this. The people I work with are fantastic. So that's great. And the people I worked with before are fantastic. When I was covering sports, and when you're covering sports, and I still do a little bit now, I felt like I wasn't having Groundhog Day, but I kind of knew some things that were going to happen. You know, Bill Belichick would have something. You know, people would go out there and get Bill Belichick to say this. And I would say, I can tell you exactly what Bill's going to say.
Yeah.
So now,
I feel like everybody can.
Everybody. So now we go on a story. Garth and I are a photographer here. We go on a story every day, and it's something new. It's something I've never done. So, like, you know, when I did prison book reform, I've never done that before. I didn't even know anything about prison book reform. I just did a story about this kid named Connor Wright, who's like 13, and he started bringing gifts to kids who are isolated through COVID. I'd never done that. I don't know people like that. So everything I do now, all the stories I do now are new. So for me, it's like a sponge. Like, I'm going out to Katie's Closets. She builds closets in schools for kids who maybe going through poverty, and they feel like you know, that you have food insecurity, they have clothing insecurity. So the teachers get
clothing. I hate clothing insecurity.
So, you know,
as a
like,
kid.
So you have clothing insecurity. So the teachers get clothing donated, they put them in a closet, and a kid, free of charge, can go in there, pick out clothes, toiletries, and stuff like that.
So clothing insecurity, this is interesting to me because it's basically like you're like, you basically can't afford
right.
clothes, and you damn sure can't afford name brands.
Exactly.
I was telling a story how I got teased when I was younger because we couldn't afford, I had one pair of shoes, right? And listen, it wasn't like we were like, you know, suffering, but like I got teased a lot. So I got in a lot of fights because I had, instead of a pair of Jordans, I had City Wings.
Oh.
I had City Wings. And I actually, Levin, I actually thought that people wouldn't know that they weren't real Jordans. So they were black and they were red and they were like maybe $20. I think I got them at like, you know, Marshalls or something like that. I was like, man, these are cool, man. I got $20. It's like, they're the same. Those guys are spending $100. No, right away. As soon as I did something good, it was like, dude, you got City Wings.
I got just the opposite. My mom was a personal shopper, so I always got clothes that were before they came out. So, like, I'm wearing La Tigre, and people are like, why are you wearing that tiger on your shirt?
What is that? And then so your mom was a personal shopper?
Yeah, like, so it was like, why are you wearing it? Why are you wearing that? And I'm like, "It's this is going to be cool." No, it's not. And, you know, just... People just
so then, like
you
were, you were, you were, was it my wife used to call it like a head of trend or something
back in the day, they didn't call it. And again, when you know how the kids are, they don't know that you're a head of trend, they just think you're wearing a stupid shirt with a tiger. You know,
and again,
why
I think,
your
I think
out front?
Okay, so you had, the, I think, what was the knockoff version was like some Janky Fox,
yes,
or some like
I remember
some
getting,
random, yeah. stupid, like you know, weird tiger that only had like. Like, I didn't have Adidas. Like, my Adidas had, like, 5 stripes.
Sure.
they didn't have 3.
I tell you.
They had 5. They're like, those ain't Adidas?
I remember coming to school with my my belt buckle, and it said Levin when you had the name belt buckles.
Wait.
Listen.
Stop. Listen. What?
Lemon belt buckle in my Levi's and my Tigra polo.
Oh,
and
my
God. It was literally the worst day of school. I had British Knights on at that time.
Oh, BKs?
Yeah, BKs.
BK Knights.
It was literally the worst day of school in my entire. Like, that day, I remember. I remember that day just crying in the bathroom.
Oh, my God. That's too funny. A belt buckle. That is so random.
No, I had my name on it and everything. Said,
wait, where did you grow up?
Long Island, New York.
Okay. Was that, like, in? It was like, oh, look, belt buckles are in.
Belt buckles
like,
are in.
So belt buckles, the country vibe in, like, Long Island, New York. Like, so how did that so somehow? Like,
the belt buckles, if you don't, remember because, like, I was wearing Fat Laces before Run DMC wore Fat Laces because I knew they were coming out. And that's when the belt buckles came out afterwards, where you could have your name. Instead, remember they had the chains with their names on it and everything like that? And I had the belt buckle with my name on it.
That is amazing. Wait, so the whole, like, mom is a personal shopper, I feel like that is so interesting.
It was different.
I do feel like there's I have this theory, because I had a paper route.
Yeah.
Okay. As a kid, and
who didn't have a paper route as a kid?
Wait, did you have a paper route?
Yeah, of course I did.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah. Who didn't have a paper route?
All right. I have this theory of, and it's specific to paper routes.
Okay.
Like how paper routes, it's a working title, yeah. Right? How it that kind of like defines who you are. It, like, builds, like, a foundation.
Absolutely.
Like, guys our age were able to have a – I hated my paper route.
Did you throw the paper or did you put the paper
behind
the door?
No, I had a bike and we threw the papers.
I never threw.
Well, how did you
– I had a bike and every house I'd get out and tuck it on the door.
Oh, they liked you.
You should see me.
So did they pay you?
Christmas was huge.
Did they pay you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I was always afraid that when I threw it, it would hit the screen door. And it would make that bang. And I would be like, oh, man, I'm messing up this dude's screen door, this man's screen door. So I get off the bike. Or, like, you know, maybe I had, like, six houses in this one area. Get off the bike, take six papers, tuck it in the door, drive down a little bit more. Get off, tuck it between the door, drive down a little bit more.
See, that you actually went above and beyond. Like, so last year when we did this, Bill Burr came on.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a paper route here locally in Boston. And he was telling the funniest stories about, and which I felt, you know, a lot of, you know, I kind of understood because – the hardest part about having a paper route was collecting your money.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It was so bullcrap because here's this, like, you know, 12-year-old kid, like, literally begging for his own money after doing a job. And, like, it was, like, $2.50.
Crazy.
Come back tomorrow. Dude, come on, bro. Like, no, I don't have it. You don't have $2.50. Are you kidding me? Like, you know I'm waking up and – so funny. Drove me crazy.
I remember saying come back tomorrow. And I didn't think, by the way,
about it.
I didn't think about it then that they come back tomorrow. But, like, there were some houses that didn't pay me until Friday. And I knew when the money was due, I think Saturday. Some houses didn't pay me until Friday. Sometimes I had to chip in my own money, make sure I get it back. It was brutal.
I remember my brother and I, like, it was like we divide and conquer type of thing where we were so upset and just fed up with the fact that we weren't getting paid. We just, either first we started off like throwing them in the bushes, right? And we just like it was like we're going to teach them a lesson. Well, we'd go get the money. Well, now they're really not going to pay us because you keep throwing the paper in the bushes. Then we finally just said, you know, we're not going to deliver them at all. So in those days, they would drop the papers off in your driveway, and then you would have to wrap them yourself.
I didn't have that.
Wow, you are so a spoiled paper guy.
No, I had to take my bike to a paper place,
and they just handed you.
And they handed you the papers.
Really,
it was like an office like this. And, you know, like how many customers you had. So I got 56 papers. The Sunday papers obviously were bigger than the others. I had to buy plastic bags when it was raining and stuff like that to wrap
them in. So they didn't provide that to you?
No, I had to buy that stuff. So I bought the plastic bags. You know, you had the basket on your bike. And I rode my bike from that. And it's not like that place was near my house. That place was like, say, a good 2 miles. So I rode my bike two miles.
How old were you?
Like 12.
That's amazing that your folks like, yeah, you're fine.
No, it's not amazing. That's how we were. I was a latchkey kid. That's how it always was when we were growing up.
I know.
Nowadays, you don't even – like, you couldn't have a kid walking around with his key to his house around his neck.
Wait, what?
I was a latchkey kid.
You were literally like, you walking around.
That's what latchkey kids were. We walked around with the key. Both my parents worked.
Well, yeah, so did mine.
So, like, how did I get in the house? You put the key on, like, a shoestring, throw it around your neck.
See, it was crazy. We didn't even lock our door, so it was literally just cruise in whenever, you know.
So you're asking me that? That's crazy.
No, I know. It is. I think I remember my mom. Actually, we got a break real quick. I remember my mom was basically forced to quit her job because we would come home and there was four of us and we were just psychos. We were psychotic. We just, no one could control us. We were all over town. Like, we just ran around barefoot with no shirt on.
Oh, that's crazy.
Just trying to play video games and, like, I don't know, find money for, like, candy. It was insane. Wow, listen, we just started this thing and I have so many questions for you. The conversation is just so easy with you. Chad Finn is going to join us. Chad Finn from the Boston Globe at 4 a.m. in the morning. And remember, we're doing all this to raise as much money as possible. If you want to donate, if you want to help us out, listen, we got a long way to go because our goal is $300,000 and we're only at 26% of our goal. So if you're up right now, if you're up early and you're enjoying the show and you understand like what people with diabetes are going through, hook us up. diabetes.org/WEEI. That is the website. That's how you donate. If you get on there right now, send me a little message and I'll make sure to try and respond to you. We'll be right back with Levin Reed and Chad Finn soon on WEEI Radio.
This is Christian Fourier's 25-Hour Crusade for a Cure, raising money for the American Diabetes Association. For more info, head to weei.com/crusade. Now, we're back to WEEI.
I can't get enough Patti Smyth, Levin.
That's seasoning your personal problem. Are you going to sing that song?
No.
You should drop your voice and sing it.
I can't. So here's the thing. Here's what we're going to do. So hold on. All right. So I want to see how influential you and Chad Finn is. So I think Chad Finn is here. I'm not even sure. I think I saw him over there in the hallway.
He's way more influential than I am.
You think? Chad Finn is more influential than Reed? You have your own show.
No. I'm part of a show with a whole bunch of people.
You have your own show.
Listen, I'm the last one on that show. I don't have my own show.
I'm curious. I'm trying to figure out if we can, right now we're at 78,000. I'm wondering if we can get to like, I don't know, can we get to like, you know, $15,000 in the next, like, you know, hour and a half or something.
We can auction
like
off something. I have something here for
you. Oh, you do have something to auction off?
Yeah.
Let's do it now. You want to tell me what it is during the break? Just tell me now. I want to know now.
So we a good friend of mine, well, he's not even a good friend. We did a story on a place called I Have Collectible Coins and Collectibles, and it's in Franklin. And I'm in there doing, because right now it's booming, the collectible business with you know, Pokemon cards and everything like that. So as we was going through his stuff, he had a print from an old, an old paper press station. And the print was with you on it. So I said, hey, I'm going to be doing something with Christian Fourier.
Hold on. So Levin's going to his little bag, and he has an old, they don't even do this anymore. What is this?
It's broken.
Oh, crap. There he is. Holy cow. All right, so hold on. Let's show right here. Let's show everybody on Twitch. You go to twitch.tv, look at WEI. So this is Adam Vinatieri and I.
Yeah.
This is the when we beat the Eagles.
Yeah.
What year was this? Oh, 2005. This is pretty
sweet. So that's when they would run it off, and that would be on the cover of the paper.
All right, so they don't make these anymore.
No, they do not do that anymore.
So how would you actually – we're going to have to talk to you about how we describe this, because I definitely want to do this. We're going to do this. I'm going to keep it right here?
Yeah, keep it right there.
I was going to mention that at – all right, so you're on from – I'm here for a while.
Yeah.
So at 5 – let's go with 5, like, 45.
Okay.
You were a DJ.
I worked in a place.
Oh, you were a radio. Explain to me how you have so much random knowledge about 80s music.
I was a young kid, and I started my internship. It wasn't even an intern. I was getting paid to, like, gopher and do different things. But, you know, if you work in a radio station, all these different music groups come through. I worked at Z100. And, that was the time of the glam rock heavy metal time. So I knew every heavy metal band that was coming through.
So I know you said that like you were more heavy metal, centric. But we have a mix of maybe 5 to 6 songs.
Put it in, whatever you got.
Okay, 5 or 6 songs.
I went to a concert that was with Public Enemy, Anthrax, and then the next day it was Run DMC, the Beastie Boys, and it was Alcatraz. And Alcatraz at the time had Steve Vai playing it before he went to play for David Lee Roth.
Wait, so. Well, you said who and Anthrax?
Public Enemy.
Public Enemy and Anthrax were on the same bill?
They were in the same bill. It was on Long Island. So they played on Long Beach. They played at
Wait, just correct me if I'm wrong. Is it not two completely different fan bases?
Different bands and
Public Enemy rolls in, Fight the Power, all that stuff.
And Anthrax rolls in. And then they played like the mashup songs together. So they would do like, you know, Bring the Pain, and they play a mashup of Bring the Pain, Fight the Power, and be like, Fight the Power! Fight the Power! It was crazy. It was crazy. But it's like what Jay-Z mashed up with, who they just mashed up with? I forget the band. Linkin Park. He did a mashup with Linkin Park, and they did the same
thing. I mean, that's basically like, what is it, Aerosmith and Run DMC. I mean, that's like when it actually first happened, but a little more commercial.
That was more commercial.
But still a mashup.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I've been obsessed with Miley Cyrus.
Why? Why would you do that to yourself?
Wait. First of all, I feel like
there's a lot of stuff that you should keep to yourself.
No. I have no shame admitting that I am a big fan of Miley Cyrus.
Well, then that's just
okay.
You.
I will say, I will say this.
If I give her
you
what?
You find me another artist that does a better job and is more eclectic and successful with cover songs.
Cover songs.
This woman, like, she's got her own. Really?
Yeah,
wagon wheel? I mean, he's only got his wagon wheel.
Darius Rucker is way more. I mean, if you think about...
I will challenge you.
Listen, you can't...
Miley Cyrus cover songs to Darius Rucker.
I will tell you, when Darius Rucker was in, when he was doing, I forget the band he was in earlier before. When he
Hootie
was,
and the Blowfish.
Hootie and the Blowfish. And then he moved on to do Wagon Wheel and his own different thing. He was covering songs all the way through to get to that, you know, country music spot.
See, I think, I just randomly came across like, I don't even know what song it was, some song by Metallica, and she was actually singing it with Metallica. The woman can literally sing any song.
Okay, she's good. I'm not dogging.
Okay.
Like, you can do the Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters can do every song.
But they're bands, though. I feel like bands should be able to do cover songs as opposed to, like, a single artist who's literally trying to, like, you know, change, like, go from range to
like
range.
Like the Zac Brown Band can do every cover.
Man, I really don't know music very well.
Do you know what's funny?
I don't know music very well.
So when we did Country Fest,
When you and I were there together?
But I would do the Thursday, Friday, and the Saturday.
Yeah.
So... And people don't understand, like, Patriots would leave and Country Fest would be there, so I'd be there the whole week. So by the third year, I knew every Kenny Chesney song because he would do sound check all the time. So by the third year, I'm, like, singing songs. Like, Kenny, my friends were like, why do you know Kenny Chesney? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't think people, like, that day was so funny. Like, we've been at CBS Sporting Club for so many times post-game, and it's not as crazy as it used to be.
I will say this.
It is not as crazy as it used to be. I remember almost, like, you holding me back so I wouldn't get into a fight.
Yeah.
Because it's like every drunk a-hole, like, wants to just challenge you.
All day long.
And I always thought this was funny. I always used to tell you, we're working. I'm working right now. This guy, I'm working. I am, like, on television trying to pay attention to the post-game show, and you keep asking me that you want to have a conversation with me.
Yeah.
I'm at my work.
There's nothing funnier than we've been there. And, you know, it gets heated with the fans who are there. And I remember once, we were the photographers were there and everything. And the guy was saying something to you, and you had about had it. And you said to him, hey, come over here. I can't hear you. And right when you said that, I was like, oh.
I was going to snatch him up. I had it. I was going to grab him. I was seriously going to grab him. And I think you were definitely the voice of, like the angel saying, probably not a good idea.
I was like, dude, you're working. Forget about
probably. I know, like,
he's had like 50 Miller Lights, and, you know, he's going to go home.
And the funny thing is that, you know, you feel like you're tethered, like you're anchored to this chair. You got the IFB, you got the microphone. So you can really only go so far, anyways.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to snatch him up,
so
like, they're not in snatching distance.
I was literally turning off all the cameras. I was like, turn the cameras off, turn away from him.
So is Chad here? Do we got Chad Finn here?
He is here, yes.
Chad Finn is here from the Boston Globe. Sorry. So, well, we have an hour with Chad to kind of go wherever we want. I've never met Chad. I don't know anything about him, but he was gracious enough to join.
He's fantastic.
He is. All right, I actually asked him to come on as a joke.
Really?
Actually, there he is. I actually told him to come on as a joke.
He's in the house.
And he actually agreed to come on. He's actually coming right now. So, wait, Chad, we're going to actually go to a quick break. Okay, and then we're going to come on starting at 4 a.m. So play us out real quick, Turpin, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.